Radio is staying late for the NFL every Sunday. A specialist team of tipsters are on air from 6 until 1 a.m. bringing you the best bets every week. We'll also have experts from both sides of the pond in the build-up to the big games. In Play Radio from William Hill. Your eyes on a world of sport.
Hello, everyone. Good to have you with us here on the NFL podcast. It's week 5 of the NFL. I'm Dave Kellner, and live from Las Vegas, the host of the Megapod, Gil Alexander, is on the line. First of all, a warm welcome to Mr. Alexander. Good morning, Gil.
Good morning, Dave. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. I want to start off by reflecting on what we saw in week 4 of the NFL, and we had the Wembley game, Gil. You've got to stop sending over these shocking teams for these matches at Wembley, Gil.
I think I mentioned it last week when I said, enjoy our Raiders. I don't know why that is. Now, you get 3 games this year, so there's 2 more to come, so I don't know that every game is a dud. But they got to stop sending the Jaguars. I think that's the team we most often send. It's really not kind.
Indeed. And the Raiders were appalling. They really were, Gil. And the atmosphere reportedly, I didn't actually go to the match, Gil, but reportedly in the first half, lots of fans for both sides, not partisan either way, just enjoying what they expected to be an intensely close encounter. And in the end, it was a blowout, and in the second half, the atmosphere apparently was abysmal.
Yeah, well, I can imagine that it was. I mean, the Raiders, you know, they fired their coach, and it's after that game, and it's one of those games that I've been saying, folks, when you were watching the game, you sort of said to yourself, they're going to fire Dennis Allen, head coach of the Raiders, on the flight home or shortly thereafter. It's just awful performance. And sadly for the NFL, Dave, that's not been uncommon this year. It's not just the game at Wembley. I mean, every Thursday night game thus far has been a blowout, all 5 of them. And then last week, in addition to the Wembley game, there was about 7 other blowouts on a 12-game schedule. So really, unless you're betting on these games and you're just watching it as a fan without action on it, it's been a pretty horrible product for the league.
Do you think there's any reason behind that, Gil?
Well, I think for the Thursday games, you can certainly pass it off as a short week. Now, that doesn't absolve the first Thursday game that was coming out of the off season, but certainly during the season, you can say, well, you know, it's 3 or 4 days, and the road team has, you know, it's a short week for both teams, but certainly even more so for the team that's traveling. So you can pass it off that way. You can do the same for a game at Wembley. It's the travel, and I even mentioned last week, we don't know how teams are going to react with that sort of transatlantic travel. As far as, you know, the fact that 2/3 of the schedule was a blowout last week, you know, maybe that's just an aberration. I don't have an explanation for that. We'll see if that persists.
Let's get stuck into the televised matches this weekend, then week 5 of the NFL, and we'll start off with the Chicago Bears at the Carolina Panthers, Sunday 6 p.m. UK time. The Bears 6-5 on the money line. The Panthers 5-7. The Bears +3 with extra juice, 5-6. The Carolina Panthers -3 at even money. So the Bears receiving the 3 points here. Both these teams, Gil, 2-2 on the season, and both coming into this on the back of pretty heavy defeats as well.
Yeah, the Bears have either been really good or really bad. And Carolina, just to be honest with you, I think they're just not good right now. Their defense has really been their hallmark in past years. Right now in Las Vegas, it's at 2.5 with extra juice. If you can get a 3 here on the Bears, a +3, I would grab the Bears. I just think they're the better football team. One of the things with the Panthers is Cam Newton, their quarterback, has been able in past seasons to rely on a stout defense and to rely on a really good running game so that he doesn't have to do too much as the quarterback. He doesn't have to win games through the air by and large. Well, the defense is an NFL worst 30% in the red zone, meaning opponents are scoring touchdowns at a really high rate inside the red zones against the Panthers' defense. And just in general, all over the field, they've given up a league-worst 5.7 yards per carry. Then as far as his backfield is concerned, D'Angelo Williams is doubtful again. He's got an ankle tweak. Mike Tolbert is on short-term injured reserve. Jonathan Stewart and Fozzie Whitaker, their status is uncertain. So an undrafted rookie is going to start behind Cam Newton, a guy named Darren Reeves, and he's expected to start, you know, after he carried 12 times for 26 yards against the Ravens. So Cam Newton's got his work cut out for him, and although he's yet to throw an interception three games, he's only got three touchdown passes, and he's been sacked nine times. He is not a quick decision maker.
One statistic that I thought was incredible in the lead-up to this game is that quarterback Cam Newton, he's only contributed 1% to the run game after accounting for 31% the past three seasons. That's a serious issue for the Carolina Panthers. And I suppose that goes back to what you were mentioning about them being unable to protect Cam Newton. He can't engage with the secondary of the opposing side this season.
He can't, and to be honest, in fairness, I've left out one big thing, which is that Cam himself is still trying to come back from injuries as well. He really was already banged up coming into the season, multiple injuries that have just been bothering him still. You would have thought by now that he would have gotten over it, but he's still really being hampered by ankle and shoulder or collarbone injuries, and Cam hasn't been himself. So perhaps if he was, he could sort of overcome some of the backfield and offensive line deficiencies and the fact that they're just not getting it done on defense, which keeps him at a deficit at all times and makes him, you know, makes the team rely on him a lot more. But all of that while being injured, it's a really tall task for the Panthers.
Are there any positives for the Carolina Panthers at all in this matchup?
Well, they're at home. There's always that. the red zone defense, as I mentioned, doesn't match up well with the Bears' offense because the Bears, while the Panthers are terrible in the red zone defensively, the Bears are 71.43% in the red zone. They're the second best team in terms of converting touchdowns in the red zone. The Bears are 2-2. The Panthers are 2-2. Just so happens the Bears' two wins are on the road, so they can't really go on that. What they're really hoping for is that the Bears' wideouts are banged up and that Newton feels better and that this rookie running back really performs. I can't really think of a positive for the Panthers coming into this other than, hey, we know we've been a good football team. Let's play like that on defense. But there's nothing on the field that we've seen that suggests anything good.
Yeah, and just to add to that, they've allowed just under 400 yards on the ground against the Steelers and the Ravens in the last 2 weeks. That even opens up the passing game for Jay Cutler. So if they can get something going on the ground, which you would expect they will be able to do against the Panthers with Matt Forte, then Cutler can air it out to Alshon Jeffrey and Brandon Marshall as well.
That's right. I mentioned that the Panthers had given up a league-worst 5.7 yards per carry. Well, okay, you ask, what's something that the Panthers can sort of hang their hat on? Well, the Bears, they run the ball a league-low 42.6% of the time. So, you know, I guess their hope is that, okay, well, maybe even if we've been bad against the run, the Bears aren't necessarily, or at least haven't been the team that would most likely exploit that. But they've got Matt Forte do the Bears, and the Bears know these statistics just like you and I do. So you would think they would try to feed Forte a little more and, as you say, set up Jay Cutler for his great passing game when those tall receivers are at it. I mean, Cutler, as long as he's not throwing it to the wrong uniform, I mean, let's be honest, Cutler has that tension. As long as he doesn't turn the ball over, the Bears are going to be fine. I mean, Cutler can beat the Bears himself, absolutely, and that's what the Panthers are hoping for.
Grab the three. Chicago Bears plus three with the extra juice at the moment, 5-6. The Carolina Panthers minus the three at even money. By the way, the total points line there is set at 45.5. The under 10-11, the over 10-11. Any thoughts on the points, Gil?
No. If I'm leaning, actually, I'm not even leaning. I think that's pretty well set. That's a good number. I don't have an opinion there.
onto the New York Jets at the San Diego Chargers this Sunday, 9:25 p.m. The Jets 5-2. The Chargers in the market at 1-3. On the spread, the Jets plus 6.5 points, even money. The Chargers minus 6.5 points at 5-6. Start with Philip Rivers, Gil. He's having an outstanding season. Passer rating of 114.5. He's thrown for 9 touchdowns, just 1 interception. The only team that has been able to stop the Chargers so far, the Cardinals in week 1. Since then, they've beaten the Seahawks, the Bills, and the Jaguars. And they've been pretty strong at home as well, Gil. Philip Rivers, first of all, outstanding quarterback, having an outstanding season.
Honestly, Dave, you're right. He may be having the best season of any quarterback in the NFL right now. You know, better than the names we would expect, certainly better than Brady, but perhaps better than Manning and Breeze for sure. And although Aaron Rodgers is picking it up now, he started slow as well. So Philip Rivers might be the best quarterback in the league through 4 weeks. And you said it. The amazing thing about all those stats, and again, 74.3% completing 74.3% of his passes for 917 yards, 8 of those 9 touchdowns you mentioned in the last 3 weeks. He is doing this sort of single-handedly because he's got no running game behind him. Ryan Matthews still out for at least 2 more weeks. Danny Woodhead done for the season with an ankle injury. I mean, that's a one-dimensional team by and large, and he's still getting it done. And that's sort of where you think, okay, it's one-dimensional. Yeah, you've been great. Can you keep doing this every week? I mean, that's legitimate skepticism. My first reaction when I saw this line early in the week on my Guessing Line show was to say, well, if it's less than a touchdown, I'll take the Chargers. And it is a little less than a touchdown. I had my Megapod show yesterday, and one of the gentlemen on there was like, no, here's why I would think about the Jets. And so it has done enough to sort of take me off this game. I don't know what to think of it. The Jets' run defense is the best in the NFL. So you couple the Chargers' running game deficiencies with the Jets' run defense, and it's super one-dimensional on that side of the ball. The Jets' pass defense has given up 9 touchdowns. They haven't picked off a pass, by the way, not doing so in the first 4 games of the season. They're the last team to start a season without an interception in their first 4 games in a long time. The only team that's done it, or the last team that did it through the first 5, was a team in 2002, the Buffalo Bills. So we'll see if the Jets can get off the ground in that category. But they're struggling, of course, on offense as well. And, you know, where do I start with Geno Smith, Dave?
I was just thinking about that, Gil, because just too many mistakes from Geno Smith. And even though they have got that ground game, if you're going to establish the run, then you need to be able to use that by using play action and get something going through the air. And it's not happening with Geno Smith under center.
You know, it's not entirely unsurprising. It's tough for young quarterbacks. And again, this is Geno Smith's second year in the league, and we've just started the second season. So it's not entirely unsurprising. You know, we tend to canonize players if they have a good game or two when they're young. Oh, my God, they're the greatest thing ever. And then when they regress back to sort of, you know, modest play, we're like, oh, he's terrible. Well, I think Geno Smith's probably where he ought to be right now, but he's got a turnover problem. There's no question about that. He's got 32 turnovers since the beginning of last season, does Geno Smith. That's the second worst total of anybody in the league since then. He has 7 already this year, and he's facing a team in the Chargers. They have a +5 turnover differential, which is second best in the league. In contrast, we talked about Philip Rivers. Philip Rivers is the opposite of that. Over the same stretch since the beginning of last year, he's only turned the ball over 14 times. That's tied for the best. With those with a minimum of 1,000 snaps. So 14 turnovers from Rivers, 32 from Geno Smith, and you can understand why one is on one end of the spectrum, you know, in terms of perception, and the other is on the opposite. Michael Vick is breathing down Geno Smith's neck. We might see Michael Vick. If Geno doesn't do well early in this game, don't be surprised if Michael Vick comes in there with the Jets averaging, you know, just 19.8 points at this point, and the passing game only topping 204 yards once so far this year. That's anemic.
You mentioned Geno Smith is where you expect him to be at this stage in his career, Gil. Has he, in your opinion, got the scope to improve? Is he a quarterback that you look at and think he can still make it in the National Football League?
You know, in college, and he went to West Virginia. I can't remember if it was West Virginia. Now I'm drawing a blank. I'm having a college blank. But Geno Smith in college, as I recall, he was not at all someone who, when I was watching him, I thought to myself, well, now there's a professional quarterback. And one of the great, you know, all of these guys get what we call scouting reports coming out of college. And one of the great scouting reports that I've ever heard was applied to Geno Smith. And it was a very simple scouting report. They said, he has slow eyes. I thought that was one of the most wonderful things I've ever heard. And what that means is he's simply slow at reading his progressions. And so I don't know that that's necessarily applied thus far in pros. Maybe that's sort of, you know, maybe that's more of a knock than it really has manifested itself. But I thought that was a great one. And yeah, a lot of these guys, you know, we were just talking about E.J. Manuel of the Bills, who's been benched this week in favor of a veteran, Kyle Orton. By the way, Geno Smith did go to West Virginia. Now, I'm clear on that. Of course he went to West Virginia. But E.J. Manuel was this guy in college who was the beneficiary of lots of great receivers, and no one thought while watching E.J. Manuel at Florida State University, well, now this is a great pro quarterback. And then all of a sudden, right after the Bills drafted him, hi, oh, yeah, this guy is a great quarterback. I think the same applies to Geno Smith. So the long-winded answer is, no, I really don't. I really don't think that Geno Smith is going to be this phenomenal quarterback.
So we're taking the Chargers here, Gil, minus the 6.5. Is that a tentative pick in this particular match?
Yeah, of the two we've done so far, if you can get the Bears at +3, I like that one better.
Let's move on to the Bengals. The Cincinnati Bengals at the New England Patriots. This is Monday morning, early hours of Monday morning, UK time at 1:30. And the Bengals 5-6, the Patriots even money. The spread here, just the 1 point in it, -1, the Bengals 10-11, the Patriots +1 at 10-11. First of all, Gil, has this line moved at all in Vegas?
Yes, and it has over the short term and over the long term. So I have talked to you before about Cantor Gaming here in the U.S. They put out the first lines on NFL games way back in May. And of all the games this week, this is the one that has the biggest difference between then and now. Then, the Patriots were 4-point favorites. Now, the Bengals are 1-point favorites. So that's a 5-point swing. Now, this opened as a pick'em, moved to being, now when I say opened this week, it opened after last week's game as a pick'em, meaning a coin flip game. Then it moved all across the board to the Bengals by a point. It has come back a little to a pick'em. I think that's the consensus across town right now. You'll either see that or Cincinnati -1. So there has been a little move. And all of that is simply based on, at least in terms of the weak move, to the Bengals being favored by a point, how miserable the Patriots looked last Monday night against the Chiefs. I mean, I assume you saw that. That was horrific.
Unbelievable. You got that game spot on, Gil, and the line having moved from the preseason line so much in the Patriots' favor was kind of weird, and the Patriots were annihilated. We'll come on to Tom Brady in a second, but as far as this matchup is concerned, Gil, it's highly intriguing because last week, if you are unaware, listeners, was the first week of byes in the NFL. The Bengals had one, so you would expect them to be fresh and ready to go this week, having started the season at 3-0 as well. The Bengals will fancy their chances, I think, at the Patriots this weekend.
Oh, they'll fancy their chances, all right. This is honestly, Dave, I think you're intimating this as well. It's the most fascinating matchup on the board this week, this Sunday night game here stateside, because you have a team in the Bengals that, based on performance on the field this season, might be the best team in the league from the eye test. What we see on the field this year, they might be the best team in the league. And we have the numbers that we could talk about to back it up. The Patriots have been god-awful, but we as football viewers have this long history of so much respect, and justifiably so, for Tom Brady, for Bill Belichick, that it's hard for us to not carry that over despite their poor play on the field this year. So it's such a fascinating contrast in that regard.
Absolutely. The question I was going to ask you about Tom Brady is, are we now seeing the gradual decline of an elite quarterback? Are we at that point right now where we're thinking Tom Brady has taken this team as far as he can take them? This is the twilight of his career.
That is the big question, Dave. It's the one that everyone's asking here. And the only way I can answer that is it's tough to judge because he's got no help. I mean, he's got if you think about who are the great skill position players on the Patriots at wideout or at running back or on the offensive line after they traded a terrible trade thus far, trading away their all-pro right guard, Logan Mankin. And you think, well, there's Gronkowski if he's healthy. That's the list. That's it. So it's almost unfair. And maybe it's the fact that Brady's aging and the lack of talent around him is coinciding, which is creating this horrible confluence of just, you know, suckiness, as we like to say on the football field. But, I mean, here are the numbers. Brady, 79.1 passer rating. That's 29th in the league. That is un-Brady-esque. He's completing a career-worst 59.1% of his passes. The 46.5 total QBR score through the first four games. It's the worst of his career. The Patriots are dead last in the NFL in yards per play. Now, you just saw the Jaguars. You just saw the Raiders. You're familiar with the Jaguars. 4.6 yards per play is worse than both the Jaguars and the Raiders.
Wow.
And the Patriots have used six different offensive line combinations in that game alone on Monday. Six different combinations. If you don't have one pat group of five that you can trust, let alone six different ones, that's a sign that things are just bad. And in comes Cincinnati, as you say, they're on a rest. They're the lone remaining unbeaten team in the AFC. They're fifth, in contrast, in yards per play on offense at 6.1 yards per play. They allow a league-low 11 points per game. Rested after the bye week, again, they lead the league in completion percentage allowed, in touchdown passes allowed. So, again, on paper, contrast. But if you could break your pen and paper out, Dave, I have the betting stats that will make you pause before you go to the window. This is fascinating stuff. Not only have the Patriots won 10 consecutive home games, including the playoffs, let's throw that out first, but Tom Brady, after a loss in his career, 36-9 straight up, 31-14 against the spread. 31-14 against the spread. That includes 5-0 straight up and against the spread since the beginning of last season. By the way, he's 1-0 this year. They beat the Vikings 30-7 after a loss. And when you break that subset down into better opponents, the better the opponent after a loss, the better Tom Brady is. So in a game after a loss with Tom Brady as the quarterback of the Patriots, when the Patriots are either just a -4 favorite all the way down to being an underdog, then it's 24-4 against the spread with Tom Brady coming off a loss. Let's break it down even more. When the Patriots are just -2 favorites or less into being an underdog, in other words, no more than a -2 favorite plus being a dog, then it's 17-2 straight up and 18-1 against the spread.
Wow.
Coming off a loss with Tom Brady at quarterback. 18-1. And by the way, that one loss against the spread was so long ago it doesn't even matter. It was in 2002. So, since November of 2002, coming off a loss, Tom Brady in that situation is either a -2 favorite or less or an underdog, 14-0 against the spread.
Incredible statistics, Gil.
Yeah, what do you do as a better?
Do you trust the numbers or do you go with instinct and perception? Because the instinct is to grab the Bengals here, but you've just mentioned the numbers there, favor the New England Patriots. It's a tough decision to make. I just wonder whether I think for the Patriots to win this game, they have to remove Andy Dalton from his comfort zone because they're establishing the run, the Bengals, with Giovanni Bernard. They've only trailed for 48 seconds this season. Because of that, Andy Dalton has been able to do what he does best, And that's just manage these games, Gil.
Yeah, I mentioned that stat on my show earlier this week or last week. 48 seconds they've trailed. I mean, the Bengals have been great. That's the thing. As football viewers, our eyes just tell us, we know who the – if we're just talking about this year, we know who the better football team is.
Absolutely.
We absolutely know. But can we – we don't expect the Bengals. As longtime viewers, we just can't bring ourselves to believe that the Cincinnati Bengals, a team that gets bounced from the playoffs every year in the first round the last 3 years under Dalton, that they're going to go into New England in a primetime night game and beat these Patriots. It's tough to wrap your brain around. Though I will say this in conclusion. Last year, Brady had a really slow start, but he knew he was getting back his wideouts, and Gronk was injured. He knew he was getting back Gronkowski. We knew that there was help on the way. We just don't know that this year. They just might stink, and we'll find out Sunday night. But I'll tell you what I'm not going to do. I'm not going to put my money in this one. I will sit back and see what happens.
And let's move on to the other primetime game this weekend. This should be a cracker. The Seattle Seahawks at the Washington, at your Washington Redskins, Gil. Tuesday, 1:30 a.m. The Seattle Seahawks 5-16 on the money line. The Washington Redskins 13-5. The Seahawks -7.5 even money. The Redskins +7.5 with that extra juice. 5-6. The points line is set at 45.5, under 10-11, and the over 10-11. Another interesting narrative here, Gil, because both these two teams have had extra time to prepare. The Seahawks, having beaten the Broncos in that Super Bowl rematch, had a bye in week number 4, and the Redskins, Gil, blown out by the New York Giants a week last Thursday. So both these teams should be coming into this matchup prepared for that Tuesday morning match.
Should being the operative word. Do we have to talk about this game, Dave? We really have to. If you can find the Seahawks -7 and not the 7.5, I'd go ahead and grab it. As you've mentioned, I grew up in Washington, D.C. The one thing, even though I don't live in D.C. anymore, the one thing is you can take the boy out of D.C., but you can't take D.C. out of the boy. So I remain a big Redskins fan. But I am very realistic about the Washington Redskins. And 2 seasons ago, the postseason, the playoffs of 2012, this is when the fates of these two franchises changed. The Seahawks came to Washington in the playoffs. Robert Griffin III and the Redskins went up 14-0 against the Seahawks. But that's when Griffin injured his leg badly on that drive to make it 14-0. Griffin was never the same in that game. He ended up blowing out his knee later in that game. The Seahawks came back to win it 24-14 and advance in the playoffs, eliminating the Redskins. And ever since that day, we know what's happened with the Seahawks. They've won a Super Bowl, nothing but glory. And with the Redskins, it's been nothing but misery. 3-13 season last year, and they're well on their way to doing that again this year. And the Seahawks still have to be a Super Bowl favorite. As you say, both teams off extra rest. But in the Seahawks' case, their coach, Pete Carroll, literally, when you say they had an extra week, he literally gave them a week off. They did not even have any practices for a week. So it's a Super Bowl champion who is extremely well rested, even beyond NFL measures that are typical. Seahawks have won 8 straight Monday night games. They're huge in prime time. The Skins, the opposite. They've dropped their last 6 night games for those who like prime time stats like that. But the real thing is this. I try to search. I'm like, okay, well, you know, you asked this about the Panthers. Is there anything good you can say about the Redskins? All right, so I searched. I searched, Dave, for you. And here's what I found. Not a lot, but big plays. Big plays the Redskins do well. So the Redskins are 3rd best in the NFL in terms of passing plays of 20 more yards or running plays of 10 more yards. So if you put that as a general category, 20-plus pass plays, 10-plus yard running plays, the Redskins actually have 7.8 of those per game. That's 3rd best in the NFL. All right, so that's something. then you say, well, how do the Seahawks combat that? Well, the Seahawks, of course, the Redskins couldn't have even a moment of glory here. The Seahawks have only allowed 3.7 of those plays per game in their first three games. That's the second-best mark in the NFL. And may I add that in doing so, they did it against Aaron Rodgers, Philip Rivers, and Peyton Manning. So in other words, oh, God, help the Redskins. I don't see how the Redskins, especially with Kirk Cousins, and we all saw Kirk Cousins, four interceptions against the Giants, a fumble on top of that. Kirk Cousins has lost his last five starts as an NFL quarterback. Again, I don't know where the Kirk Cousins hype comes from. It's almost this strange Robert Griffin III backlash that, you know, wants to catapult Kirk Cousins into being this glorious quarterback. He's not. He hasn't played very much. It's expected. And against the Legion of Boom in Seattle, I don't expect him to be able to do much.
Yeah, in my mind, Gil, we found out definitively that Kirk Cousins is not an upgrade on Robert Griffin III, something that you mentioned on a previous podcast of ours as well. It's going to be tough for the Redskins with the Seattle Seahawks, given that prime time record they have as well this weekend. We talked fleetingly, I think we talked about this on Twitter, about the Seahawks and their win against the Broncos, not just significant as far as this season is concerned, but also as far as betting is concerned, Gil. And you made a salient point on Twitter about the change in the overtime rules affecting bettors massively in that game.
Yeah, a couple seasons, actually it was three off-seasons ago, so this is the third season that it's been in effect, I believe. Overtime rules in the NFL changed. Before that change, overtime was a sudden death situation. So the first team that scored won the game. So if you scored, if you got the ball, if you won the coin flip, you receive the ball, you march downfield, and you kick a field goal, hey, you win. Other team doesn't have a chance to get the ball. That's how it was, sudden death. And they changed it at first for the playoffs. They decided, yeah, let's not let a team's season end on that in the playoffs. And then they subsequently changed it for the regular season. So, yes, the new rule is such that if you get the ball first and you score a touchdown, yes, then you still win the game. But if you fail to score a touchdown, if you score a field goal or don't score, obviously if you don't score, but even if you only get a field goal, then the other team does get the ball. They are allowed to match that or do better. And so what it has created is a different set of circumstances with how a team strategizes in overtime. So the Seahawks in the game you're referring to, 3 years ago, the Seahawks would have probably played conservatively once they got the ball into Broncos territory, and they would have set up a field goal to win that game. Well, the spread was more than 3 points, yeah, if you recall. And so Seahawks bettors probably would have ended up losing in overtime. In other words, Seahawks bettors would have been like, oh, we need a miracle touchdown. And they would have used the word miracle because it just doesn't happen that often when a team doesn't have the incentive to go for a touchdown. Now, the opposite was the case. You knew as a Seahawks bettor with a spread more than three, you're like, ah, we know they're not trying to settle for a field goal. They want to end this with a touchdown. So totally different set of circumstances now. Fascinating for bettors. Millions, tens of millions of dollars difference in changing hands this year versus in the past.
Yeah, which is incredible. Absolutely incredible. So we're siding with the Seahawks here, but 7.5, probably the right number, Gil?
You know, maybe this is just because I watch the Redskins week after week after week, and maybe I'm almost more down on them than the average person is. You won't make a living taking road favorites of more than a touchdown, typically. But, you know, this might be my lock of the week because I have to distinguish between a lock and a shock. this might be the lock. I just don't know how the Redskins can keep this in single digits. I don't. And, you know, the other thing that the Redskins are terrible with this year, Dave, they get penalized a lot. That's never been a hallmark of Redskins teams. That's like a Raiders type of signature thing to get penalized a lot. But the Redskins this year, well, they average 10 penalties for 97 yards per game. So they can't afford to make those mistakes either. So I really like the Seahawks. But, yeah, I prefer 7 over 7.5, but I still think the Seahawks cover at 7.5 here.
Best bet of the week then, Gil. Is it going to be those Seattle Seahawks?
It is going to be the Seattle Seahawks. And the other thing you can enjoy about this game Richard Sherman of the Seahawks, DeSean Jackson of the Redskins, two renowned talkers who happened to play Little League Baseball with each other. They grew up together. There is going to be a lot of talking on the field, and I think Richard Sherman's going to get the best of the talking. Yeah, the Seahawks are my lock of the week.
Looking forward to that immensely. Nothing like what we call a bit of sledging out there, Gil. Nothing like that. Enjoy that immensely. And the shock of the week, Gil, spot on last week with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Not only did they win receiving the points, they won outright on the money line as well at the Pittsburgh Steelers. So very good pick there last week, Gil.
I wish I had called the outright win, but we'll take the against the spread win.
What's the one this week, Gil?
You know, it's an interesting week, Dave, because there are so many big spreads. I mean, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 games,
yeah,
I see, of spreads that are 6 or more. And if you toss in San Francisco, it's 9. So there's a lot to choose from in terms of what could be a shock of the week. So I could go any number of directions here, but the one I'm going to pick is the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm going to go with the Chiefs to cover the spread as 6-point underdogs at San Francisco and maybe even to win this one outright. I love the Chiefs in this spot. This is the return of Alex Smith to San Francisco. You may recall that in 2012, Alex Smith got a concussion in Week 10. Colin Kaepernick came in the lineup, and he never left the lineup. We never saw Alex Smith again. And at the time, Alex Smith was the third highest-rated passer in the NFL. Never played another down for the Niners. Now he's experiencing some good success with the Chiefs. First time back in San Francisco, he is going to be really primed to play this football game. Colin Kaepernick, on the other hand, you know, we talked about Geno Smith. Ryan Tannehill is another one of these guys in Miami. A lot of hype surrounding him, and now all of a sudden people are like, oh, man, he's terrible this year. Well, I don't know that we can say that yet about Colin Kaepernick, Dave, but it sure is starting to drift that way. Kaepernick, one touchdown with 3 picks from inside the pocket this season, 2 touchdowns with 6 picks and 11 sacks from inside the pocket over his past 7 games, counting the playoffs. And if he doesn't have Vernon Davis as his security blanket, and there's some doubt as to whether or not his tight end Vernon Davis is going to play, Kaepernick is not good at all. The 49ers have problems. We've talked about them before. A lot of injuries. A lot of guys supposedly not listening to the coach. I like the Chiefs here to cover big time in San Francisco.
And if you don't listen to Jim Harbaugh, you are going to find out you're not listening to Jim Harbaugh. He will tell you that that he's the man, won't he?
He's a raving lunatic. I won't lie to you. But yeah, I really think, you know, there's a lot of reports this week that he doesn't have the locker room anymore, that
okay,
they have tuned him out. And so we'll see. Again, that's the thing with the Niners. As long as they're winning, that gets swept under the carpet. But let them start losing, oh boy.
He does seem to be staring down his receivers more than he's ever done before, Colin Kaepernick, Gil.
It's a good point. You know, we talked about the slow eyes with Geno Smith. You know, he's just hasn't been in the league that long. It's you know, we tend to, oh man, he's amazing. And he is amazing on the ground, right? Kaepernick's this big body who has this great multi-dimension. But when you force him to throw in that pocket, he's not great. He's not great at all. And you know, he's young. So the Chiefs should probably exploit that on Sunday. I expect them to.
And we've never seen a great quarterback in this league, Gil, that can't do it through the air. At the end of the day, it always comes down to the passing with the quarterback.
100% right. There is no quarterback in the history of the NFL that has won a Super Bowl that is primarily known as a running quarterback. Even Steve Young, who won a Super Bowl with the 49ers, he was a running quarterback early in his career, but that's not what got him to the Super Bowl victory. He became a phenomenal. Well, he was always a phenomenal passer, but he really relied on a phenomenal arm and passing game to get him to the Super Bowl.
Gil Alexander, thank you very much for your company on this Friday afternoon our time, Friday morning your time. I've got everything crossed for the Washington Redskins this weekend, despite having serious reservations with the Seahawks coming to town.
Watch them win by 30 now, Dave.
hopefully, sir. Thank you, Mr. Alexander.
Dave, thank you so much, sir.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.